Welcome, Solari family, to the Help Series with Jennifer Walters. And I am here with the most fabulous guest. You're going to just love her. She is a superhero to me and to a lot of the nurses that I know, those that haven't been brainwashed. Her name is Nicole Sarotek. She is a BSN-RN. She's been a nurse for over a decade. She specializes in critical care. It's amazing. Trauma, flight. So what a perfect place to put her in New York at the beginning of this pandemic, right? And so she could save a bunch of lives and be fabulous. And she is the founder of American Frontline Nurses and the Nurse Advocate Network. So Nicole, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, and welcome to the Solari Report?
Well, thank you for having me. My name is Nicole Sarotek. I'm the founder and executive director of American Frontline Nurses. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and our specialty is advocacy services. And I have to stress, you have to, when you type it into the search bar, it has to be American Frontline Nurses, because if you type Americas, you get sent to a scam site because you get people scamming our name. Yeah. So yes, I was the original New York nurse whistleblower from May of 2020, and it's been a wild ride ever since.
I bet it's been crazy. So the Health Series, Catherine and I decided that I've been out of the health insurance. I haven't had health insurance for my family since 2008, 2009, right after my son's vaccine injury, because I never find help under the insurance. So I kind of went out of the system. Mm-hmm. And we've been just doing really well without it. If we have to have something major done, I call around, I get prices, we find special doctors. You know, anybody who can actually help us isn't under a plan, right? So, mm-hmm. But if we get hit by a bus or hit in a car crash or whatever, I have a AAA policy that takes care of that. But I also have gone into different hospitals that I know, and I know, okay, this one is where I could go if he broke a leg. This one is if my little one falls out of a tree. You know, you kind of have a plan, right? So when COVID hit, I immediately went into my home health patients, and I told them, okay, guys, you know, let's get set up. Let's get your immune systems boosted. Let's feel better. And I thought that all my other nurse friends would be doing the same thing. And it was like zombie nurses. Everybody turned into a zombie. They were taking pictures of themselves on Instagram with a mask on. They were enjoying people clapping for them. They were getting free pizzas. I didn't know what was happening. And then I saw you sobbing and saying they are killing our patients in New York. And you were telling us terrible stories. And I know that being out of the health system, I've been breaking people out of the hospital, That's what I did even before COVID, right? You know, because you would be like, oh, they'd be better over at this hospital, or they need to be home with their family or whatever. But now it's become like a battleground. So tell me just a little bit about what happened in New York, and then a little bit about, and then why you started, you founded American Frontline Nurses, because you have a nurse advocate network there that is doing exactly what I've always dreamed of. So that will help us all, especially the Solari family, stay out of the medical, what do you call them? Killer hospitals?
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. So tell me about it.
So New York, when I got there, I was indoctrinated like everybody else. I thought, oh my God, this is it. It's just like the Spanish flu. Millions of people are going to die. You know, I was actually 4 months postpartum from having my daughter, and I had actually just stepped down for flight because I had a one-year-old and a four-month-old, and I physically couldn't, you know, pump or even fit in the helicopter anymore. So I was just like, you know what? Yeah. Hey, yeah, I know, when your knees are up in your chest and you've got this big old pregnant belly, you know, or you're walking around your flight suit and your breast pumps are in like that. And you're like, don't mind me. We're going to just lift this car.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it was near impossible. You know, as a mom of two under two. So I, you know, they needed nurses in New York. And how often can you help serve your country in a time of crisis and not be military? And so I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. I know how to manage ventilators. I know how to intubate people. I know how to do all these things. I'm like, that's just nothing. You know, we were trained on this. So I went to New York and I had drank the Kool-Aid too. I'm like, oh, masked. You know, I was bleaching my apples before I brought, you know, when I got them home from the grocery store. So, right. You know, I thought it was the real thing too. And then you get there and you're like, you get onto the unit and, you know, first we get this little impromptu orientation. They're like, okay, who can read an ABG, which is an arterial blood gas, which is the labs for monitoring how well the vent is working. And I'm like, I can. They're like, okay, who knows how to intubate? I'm like, I can. And they're like, who knows how to do this? And I'm like, I can. And I'm like, who knows how to, you know, manage a chest tube? I'm like, I can. Like, and I'm looking, I'm like, y'all don't know how to do that? And then you find out, because they asked your discipline, they were OR nurses, they were school nurses, they were home health nurses, you know, because I was also a home health nurse, but I'm just like, I also know how to manage a ventilator too. So they didn't have the right type of nurses. And then you get onto the unit and then you realize nobody knows what's going on and people are just dying left and right. And they're not dying of COVID. They're dying because the sedation ran off. They're dying because the pressor ran off that was controlling their blood pressure. They're dying because they were diabetic and nobody gave them insulin. You know, they were an AFib patient and nobody gave them Coumadin because nothing else existed other than COVID. And not only that, we had defective ventilators. We didn't have, you know, remember, go back, guys, you can Google this. They wanted 30,000 ventilators, but did they ask for 30,000 feeding pumps? No, you know, they weren't feeding these people either.
Yeah, I had a question. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when I would go in and get a little old lady out who had been sitting in the ER because they, you know, she just had congestive heart failure and needed to, you know, Lasix or something.
Lasix. I would,
you know, go in and just get her home. And, you know, anyway, this is the very beginning. And I would, you know, oh, Aunt Barbara needs to go over here. You know, we grab her and we get her out or whatever we had to do. But I remember there didn't seem to be a lot of talk about respiratory therapists. I wanted to know what was going to happen. Like, all right, dialysis. Like,
nope.
What about sequential compression devices? You know, like churning the patient. Nope. Any pulmonary toilet? I mean, I'm an old school nurse, but still, you know, like anything, like any sort of. That's so frightening.
There was one There was one respiratory therapist to 300 patients. I was the one running around helping with everyone's ventilators. And I just like, nobody knew how to check the pressures in the endotracheal tube cuff to make sure that they were at occlusion pressure. Nobody knew how to manage the ventilators. There was one such case where I, you know, there's no sequential compression devices. And I found out that there was a stash of them on a different unit. So I asked the nurse to cover me, ran up to the other unit, literally ran because I didn't want to be away too long. Cause my other nurse, right. The nurse that was with me was a labor and delivery nurse. And I'm like, she's not gonna know what to do.
She's useful.
Well, I mean, you don't want the critical care nurse in the OB. I'm like, what do you need? What do you need? I don't know what you need because I don't do that. We're specialized. So I run up there and out comes this nurse and she's a young girl. Come to find out she was a student nurse with 3 semesters of nursing school. Because remember, the New York governor gave permission for student nurses and medical students to act as full-fledged nurses and doctors. She runs out and she's crying and she's screaming. She has no clue why he's dying. And I go in there and his ventilator is set to 6 breaths per minute. And I don't know if anyone knows, you need to breathe between 10 to 20. So he was becoming hypoxic. He was suffocating to death ultimately because she didn't know what the ventilator settings needed to be. So I go in there and I start fiddling with it, but then he codes. And I took a picture because I happened to be on my phone. I was messaging my husband, like, you know, because I had a free moment as I'm like power walking down the unit. The last thing you want to do is run. It spooks people. And I took a picture because I would take pictures of my ventilator settings because then you have to go back to the nurse's station and then document them all. So it's a timestamp and then you can't get your numbers wrong. And, you know, people are like, oh my God, she took time to take a picture instead of helping the patient. I'm like, that patient was practically dead before I got there. I was the one coding them. And then we had no code buttons and I'm like, call for help. And she's just in the hallway crying and people are comforting her. And I'm on this guy's chest doing chest compressions. I'm like, come in here and help me. And this wasn't even my patient.
Did you just say no? There's no code buttons?
No, because these were offices that they shoved those little portable monitors in with a portable ventilator and a hospital bed, which was
picture.
Yeah, it was. I've worked in field hospitals in the middle of South America that were better equipped than these New York hospitals. Like, let me tell you. Because you know what? They were inner city hospitals. They service low income and minorities, and nobody cared. Nobody cared.
No.
But
they want everybody dead anyway. So yeah.
Because they were,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Tax on the economy. So yeah. So I go up there and I get those sequential compression devices, but once again, the wrong nurse, the wrong treatment. And then it came to a point where, you know, you're seeing so much stuff wrong and you're pointing out like, hey, you should be on end-tidal. The person should be on end-tidal, which measures the amount of CO2 that breathes out of you. And everything like that. And one girl's like, I am so sick and tired of you talking about end-tidal. And I'm like, I don't know about you, but in critical care, that's a basic standard of care. We don't have people on ventilators if you can't have end-tidal. Like, we literally won't even transport people in flight if we can't monitor their end-tidal. Because she's like, his SpO2 is like 98%. I'm like, that's because it's stuck to the bed. That's not even on his finger. And I'm like, so that's how I can tell you that he's going, like, he's starting to go hypoxic. Because he's not within his parameters. And then nobody knew how to run a code. Like, the doctors come to find out that we were taking orders from. One was a podiatrist. Yeah. One was an optometrist. Right. One was a gynecologist. And we didn't ask these questions until, like, you're like, I'm like, hey guys, we've got a rhythm back. You know, we need to hit him with the presser and blah, blah, blah. And the guy just stood there. And I'm like, this is what you do. Come on, you got it. And they didn't know what to do because they didn't know CPR. They didn't know how to read the rhythms. They didn't know what to do when somebody coded. And speaking of coding, there was that, you can check this. The governor of New York said, you're not to code anybody. EMS in the hospitals, if they go, they go. And I said, you know, a lot of these people are they're only 50. They're robust. They're still healthy. Like, there's no reason for us not to code them. They'll come back. This isn't, you know, advanced cancer stage, hospice, 98, 101 year old that we're going to do chest compressions on. This is a young 55 year old male that's in good fit health. Let's save this person. And so we just took it upon ourselves to start coding people because they told us no. And we said, that's not how that works. And so it was everything they told us to do was the opposite of what we should be doing. Do you remember when they told you, like, you heard on the news not to take ibuprofen?
Oh yeah, that was a huge thing. I even remember I had to fly my son to his specialist in Florida, and his specialist stood in the room, who's a very smart guy. And he said to me, oh, well, we're not going to give Advil anymore to the, and I was like, you believe that? And that was February of 2020. And he was telling me this whole long spiel.
We're still anyway, 2 years later telling people it's okay to take ibuprofen if you have a fever. 2 years later, we're still telling people it's okay. Everything they told us to do in New York, which was perpetuated across the country, was wrong. And so it was the protocols that were killing people. And then, you know, so I got kicked out of the first hospital because I really pushed to get this little Hispanic lady off the ventilator because her labs were perfect. In the documentation, she only came in because she had a fever. And it literally said, because the news told her to, if she had a fever. And so door to intubation time was 15 minutes and all she had was a fever. So she was completely resolved. I wanted to get her off the vent. I kept pushing. And so they moved me because I pushed to get her off the ventilator. Then they moved me to the next hospital, and the next hospital was where all the pharmaceutical drug trials were going on. And that's when Remdesivir rolled out, and people were living longer because that's where all the CRNAs were, the nurse anesthetists, right. And most of them were critical care before they become advanced practice nurses. And so a lot of them know how to manage and deal with ventilators. So they were living longer, but everyone that got put into the clinical drug trial for Remdesivir died. In the same exact steps, their kidneys would shut down, their liver would shut down, they would start retaining fluid, they would end up on dialysis, and they would go into flash pulmonary edema, congestive heart failure, and die. And their magnesium levels would go off, their albumin levels would go off, their ferritin levels would go off. It was like clockwork. That's why it's like literally by this certain day, by this many doses, we know exactly what's going to happen. I'm like, maybe you guys should stop giving that. And then at that hospital, I had this really robust 56-year-old black man, tall, like, you know, fit. He looked like he did physical activity, you know, no real previous history other than some mild hypertension. And they, you know, he was completely resolved of COVID. He was on a trach. We were going to, you know, get him extubated. We were going to send him to an LTAC. He was going to go home, or what we call discharge to life. And then right. The clinical drug coordinator rolled up and she's like, oh, your person's been enrolled in this drug trial. I'm like, well, he's COVID negative. Why does he need this drug if he's COVID negative? And she's like, well, he meets the criteria. And I'm like, the fuck he does. That's what I told her. I told her, I'm not hanging that. If it's a last ditch effort to save his life because he had COVID and he was dying, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I totally get it. Last ditch effort, you know, let's try anything. I'm like, he's resolved. He needs to be weaned off this ventilator and he needs to go home. And she's like, well, you need to hang this drug. And I said, I do not have to do anything. And she goes and gets the charge nurse. Charge nurse tries to bully me into it, and I still wouldn't do it. Then they get the nurse administrator on call, who was like, because I was on night shifts. And she's like, well, we'll send you back to the hotel. And I'm like, well, send me back to the hotel. I don't live here. I'm from the other side of the country. I came here to help you people because you needed people you needed nurses that can run ventilators. And so they realized that I would back down because I have a legal right to refuse to administer medication if it will cause imminent threat to the life of the patient.
Of course you do.
And I legally can. And I'm like, this will cause imminent threat to his life because everything is completely fine on his labs right now. He does not need this and his kidneys will fail as soon as I give this to him. And so then they moved me and then I realized this was just a system that if you don't comply with the orders and the protocols, you will get booted. And then that's when I made that video because I'm like, I'm not going to let him die because the night that I didn't show up for the little Hispanic lady, she died that night because they gave her an inexperienced nurse. She blew a pneumothorax and she died. A completely healthy person that should have been taken off that vent. She was a little grandma. She should have gone home to her family. Yeah. And so I said, no, I'm not going to do this. You know, and I had been calling. I had stayed up and I had been calling. I was calling, like, you know, Jayco. I was calling CMS. I was calling the ombudsman. I was calling the health department. And everything was closed. Nobody would help me. I tried calling Black Lives Matter because I'm like, shoot, we're in New York. They'll help us. You know, nope. I tried calling. I even went as far as calling like LGBTQ, like Black advocacy groups, because, you know, a lot of times they can give you a referral if they can't help you. Nobody would help me. Nobody. I even tried like, okay, I'll try the newspaper with a confidential tip line. And nope, no one would help me. And then that's when I said, and then I go into the shift and they took the patient away and then they moved me off the unit. They made me give my two ventilator patients to two other nurses. So they're each managing three ventilators. They moved me onto a unit that was non-COVID that had seven nurses to four patients. And I just got so angry. I asked them to send me home because I was so mad. I was going to start throwing things. Like, how dare you do this to these patients? You're jeopardizing the ones that I had just left because the more patients you take, the greater the risk of harm because you can only manage so much. And this is like total care patients on ventilators.
Oh yeah.
So I'm like, okay. So then they make me go, they go home, they send me home in an Uber or back to the hotel. I have to get checked out by occupational health to make sure I wasn't suicidal. And I said, I'm not suicidal. I'm homicidal. I'm pissed.
Exactly.
The trauma therapist that was there, she was telling me, sorry. I get so choked up talking about this stuff.
we'll get to the good stuff. Just take a sip of water, take your time. I'm trying not to have a heart attack, so I code because I'm listening to this. I worked critical care as a student nurse and then I was trained straight through and then I did it for a few years and I know all the hard work that went into it, everything that I had to know, the nurses that were above me that knew so much. And my respiratory therapist, just the thing that keeps flashing into my mind is my RT. I still call him my RT. Like if I see him in the grocery store, I'm like, it's my RT. They're the ones that it's always refer to the RT, refer to the RT, ask the RT, respiratory therapy. But, you know, I'm just thinking of all the steps that they didn't have. And then I remember how scared I was the first day as a student nurse standing there with this huge machine and a CABG, a coronary artery bypass guy just came out and I remember standing there and going, I don't want to kill anyone. You know, like it's massive to know how to work those things. I couldn't imagine being dropped on a floor and nobody's there. You know what I mean? Like to really back you up. And then of course you're there, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's crazy to me that they're just allowed to do this.
Anyway. Yeah. And so when the trauma therapist wanted to check me out, she was like, she wanted to talk to me, make sure I wasn't like going to harm myself. I'm like, look, I have dealt with Ebola outbreak. I've dealt with the measles outbreak. I have worked humanitarian efforts in Haiti and Sri Lanka and, you know, Ethiopia. This is not my first rodeo. What you guys are doing is inhumane. We would this should never go down in the United States. I'm like, they are murdering these people in these hospitals. And she's like, you know, I hear the nurses tell me that a lot. And at that point, I literally just looked at her and I said, everyone knows and no one will say anything. And after that, you know, the video went viral. Because, you know, when you work in a team, especially when you work in flight, you're bouncing ideas off your team. And so I'm like, okay, guys, what can I do? What else can I do? I've worked myself into a corner and, you know, give me an idea that I can run with, that I can do something about to make a difference. And I had exhausted every single effort that was possible. And that's what that video was. And I went upstairs and then went back, and that video went around the world in just a couple hours. And I didn't even realize it because I was like having this mental breakdown in my hotel room, you know, getting ready to fly out. And I'm just like, no one will listen to me. And the crazy thing is, sorry, like I said, I get choked up talking about this stuff.
You know,
the crazy thing is about, and you're in the hotel and you're there with thousands of nurses and the staffing agency is on site at the hotel with you. No, not once the staffing agency get a hold of me to ask what happened, because the video was all over the internet. It was all over, like in the group chat that I was in for that hospital with the nurses that I worked with. They were all just talking trash about me, all just talking trash. Is she the one that writes flight nurse on her scrubs? Cause we have paper scrubs. I'm like, yeah. So you know what your discipline is. So people know to go to who for what, you know, you don't want to come to the flight nurse. If you need dialysis, go to the one that says dialysis over there, because there's no badges, guys. Remember?
Yeah, I get it.
You know, and you're all in this mask.
Like you were wearing it. Like you were wearing it. So you would look good on Instagram. You know what I mean? Like their brains were crazy.
I didn't even have an Instagram at that time. I only started Instagram.
Of course not. Like, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Crazy. They're not even thinking. Yeah, like, anyway.
Yeah, and so the video goes viral, and then everyone started to wake up to what was going on, and all these stories started to flood in about what people are seeing. But the nurses didn't want to let it go because they wanted to be heroes, because for the first time, somebody understood the value of a nurse when we had always been treated as second rate in comparison to doctors and all other disciplines. But our job is to protect these people and to provide quality, competent care, because that's what they deserve. And we're getting paid $150 an hour. You damn well better get $150 worth of care per hour from your nurse.
Unbelievable.
So I go back home and then my life just completely falls apart because everyone thought I was a crisis actor. Everyone thought I was fake. They thought I made it up for attention. I wanted to make
money.
Not everyone. And I was getting death threats. People were stalking my home. My home was broken into several times. Like I had to call 911. Someone was trying to get into my front door. Yeah. I was literally at the top of my stairs with a rifle. I had locked my children into the closet and I stood at the top of my stairs ready to defend my home because my husband was on night shift. After that, we had to move. And, you know, I said, once I got my mental health together, because I actually almost did commit suicide once I got back home because the backlash was so severe and I was gaslit so bad. I ended up myself. Yeah. I had to watch my own videos again. I said, nope, I did not make that up. And then
no, you didn't.
From there, I just gained some internal strength and I'm like, I didn't make this up. I'm going to do something about this. And I created American Frontline Nurses because nurses are valuable. We are your best defense from negligent care, accidental care, you know, inappropriate care. So nurses have value. And so all these nurses, when the mandates came out, they didn't want to participate in that experiment. So a lot of them are like, well, what can I do? And I'm like, you know what? You are a valuable healthcare professional with, you know, important knowledge, and nurses are specialists when it comes to healthcare bureaucracy. Let's repurpose all of you to be advocates. And so we do a lot of pro bono work. We charge nominal fees, but you've got a nurse advocate that's going to tell you, okay, this is what's going to happen. And you want to talk to the doctor about this. You want to talk to the doctor about that. You know, people are like, all of our trolls are like, oh my God, you're outside your scope of practice. It's like, nope, we use nursing knowledge. We don't actually physically write prescriptions. We don't physically do nursing skills. And so we have, you know, thousands of nurses. We have a couple on the website that you can hire. We have Ask an Advocate Zoom, where you can come into our Zoom and you can ask questions and we can give you guidance on what to do, where to get resources, things like that. And we have been pushing through policy changes in states like Florida with no patient left alone after the Tamara Drott case. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. She was a Florida kindergarten teacher. She got COVID, was put on a ventilator, and we got a lawsuit going.
Overloaded her with fluid or something, or I think.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We got a lawsuit to give her ivermectin, and the hospital attorney kept stalemating us, knowing that she was running out of time. So we would do a lot of that stuff, and we just kept fighting back. In Tennessee, we helped push through where you can get ivermectin over the counter, and just lots of other little legislation wherever we can. And our biggest thing is getting everyone ready for when they're sick, improving your health, and teaching you how to advocate for yourself, and teaching you what to do with healthcare bureaucracy when it comes your way.
Well, it's just amazing what you're doing. And I want you to know that I'm really sorry that you were gaslit. I had no idea. I'm in California. I would have driven up to Reno, wherever you were, and, you know, Elko, Nevada, wherever. I would have been there and been like, it's okay. I want you to know how important your work has been. It's so important, because here I'm just in my house, driving around all my high-risk patients, just being a nurse. And you know, as a nurse, we're not just somebody who comes in and signs in. When we meet that family, we become the family. I become either the mom, the dad, the grandma, whatever place I need to be, I'm their protector. You put on your shield, you got a couple of swords, and you're ready to go. And that for that 12 yep. hours, that family is yours, and you're going to take care of them. You're going to stop that doctor from walking in on her while she's on the, you know, bedside commode. You know, even if that's just a little thing, you're not going to let that happen, because that's embarrassing for her. You know, just patient dignity. Patient dignity is the huge part. And then, of course, just their health and being able to breathe and stay alive. So I want you to know how much you meant to me, because I was devastated watching all of my friends line up and dance in TikTok videos when I'm driving from house to house with like big bottles of silver hydrosol. And I found IV places that show up the day if you're hungover, you can get a traveling IV, you know, and so there's a lot of that out here. Not a lot of drunks that need IVs, but there's a lot of those businesses out here. And I had all of them kind of lined up on speed dial, and I would send them to people's houses, and I was constantly doing, and I was giving the EVMC Dr. Paul Merrick's printouts to every doctor I knew that worked, that had hospital privileges. And so they were like, oh, wow. You know, so they started fighting. Some of them didn't fight, and the others did. And the others would go into their little ladies in the the nursing homes and all the little hospice and whatever. And they'd just be giving them like butt shots of ozone, butt shots of vitamin C, you know, whatever they could do. They were just doing it, right, to try to help. And then when FLCCC came out, I was right there, you know, so you kept my head out of the oven and you kind of focused. I knew that I had to take control, and I knew that I had to send off things to other nurses, and you actually converted a lot of people. And the people who came on and were psychos to you, you know that they're being paid, or they've got a screw loose, because you're not a crisis actor and you're a real nurse. So I just want you to know that you're very important to me. And I know that sounds creepy. I haven't met you, but I'm just saying, as one nurse to another, thank you for what you've done. So I wanted to open up the nurse advocate network, kind of show Solari Health Series how this works. Like, what do you do? What let's do it this way. What should someone do who is preparing for monkeypox? That's moneypox. Who gets a cold, right? And what I call that is high sugar season. So your body's detoxing whatever crap you've ingested. But let's just say you start to get snotty nose, a cough, and you feel yucky. Instead of running for the COVID test, what could we do? What do we need to do first? Just like a little thing of what you would do for, can you call somebody using frontline, American frontline nurses? And the next one is, if somebody has that cold, accidentally goes into the hospital and then gets sucked into that system, how we can use the advocates there. So two different things.
Yeah. So the first thing we try to do is just try and keep you out of the hospital. So we have a resource page, and if you need medications or to talk to a doctor, you know, not just for early intervention, but for anything, we really promote that everyone go to remote health solutions. They are freedom-minded doctors. It's actually two military veterans that created this system. And you get doctors in all 50 states and pay, like, I think, like $100. If you use code AFLN, you'll get a 10% discount. And you can get a telehealth visit, and they'll give you the early intervention meds. Yeah, you'll get the early intervention meds you need. And if you need pharmaceuticals, we work a lot with this freedom-minded pharmacy in Illinois called Prec Shop Pharmacy, and they will actually ship the medications to you. So they're two really great resources just for getting your medications. And then if you need help kind of understanding your medications or understanding the protocols, you can always go to Ask an Advocate on our website of the Advocate Network, and you can click in. It's $5 to get into the Zoom. We charge $5 because it keeps the trolls out. They were invading our Zooms, trying to like wreak havoc and everything. So it's like very, very nominal. We try and keep our fees very, very nominal so we can help everybody. And if you end up in the hospital and you end up with a complex case, like, you know, someone is hospitalized and you know that they're going to give you the killer protocol, you can actually enlist the help of a nurse advocate on the Advocate Network, and she will walk you through what needs to be done, how to avoid it. You know, people don't realize that a lot of times they order you medications and you actually have a right to refuse. Oh, well, we're starting this antibiotic. Well, what's the antibiotic? You know, they don't even tell you we're doing it. That's not informed consent. Doctor just wrote it, nurse is going to implement it, and you're going to take it. And this is how everyone gets remdesivir, is because they were just hanging it. Did you bother to ask them, you know, if they had any drug allergies to remdesivir or to any of these other things like that? No. It's like, do you know that like a huge part of the problem with BiPAP is oxygen toxicity because they crank the oxygen up too high? Nope, we train our nurses for all of that. You know, a lot of the times the ventilator settings were inappropriate. The tidal volume, which is based off a mathematical equation of height and weight, wasn't done correctly. They automatically put it to 400. I'm like, no wonder he's got barotrauma. Things like that. You know, we know what labs to look for. We know how to head things off, because your best defense is a good nurse. We're supposed to think of things before they happen, so we stop them before they happen. We shouldn't be reactive. We should be proactive. And so the nurse will work with the family member or even the patient. I've been on the phone with the patient in the hospital on a BiPAP machine. I'm like, this is what you're going to tell the doctor. This is what you want done. And, you know, our trolls like to say, once again, we're acting outside our scope of practice. And it's like, no, I didn't write a single damn order. The doctor did.
Nope.
You know, it's, you know, it's just ridiculous. And so
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, it's just, and because we fight back the healthcare bureaucracy, because we don't go along with the narrative, it, you know, especially me, because I'm the face of American frontline nurses, we have come under such attack that it's insane. It's insane.
That was gonna be my next question. Abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about that, because you have this spectacular website, and I'll have all of these links down below for all of our people. I'll have all the different information for them so then our subscribers can go and look up all that stuff. So what has this done to, number one, obviously, I mean, you've been pushed to the brink of suicide, and then you have all these jerks coming after you. you know, so what else has happened? Like, what's going on with like your nursing license? And, you know, anyway, tell me.
Well, ever since Senator Ron Johnson, when I went to speak at the Senate, telling him about how the protocols were killing people and remdesivir was killing people. And once again, that video went around the world again.
That was amazing. And I have a link to that too. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I was there to speak for the patients and for the nurses. We don't want this to happen. And ever since then, the trolls, all those TikTok nurses, all those TikTok famous nurses, they like to make TikToks about me and tell everyone to call the State Board of Nursing and file false complaints against my nursing license. So I am financially drained just trying to protect my nursing license for thousands of dollars in and with no extra money. And the issue is that I've done absolutely nothing wrong because I'm not practicing as a nurse. I'm not employed as a nurse because my name's Nicole Sarotek and I can't escape a Google search of my name. So I'm unemployed. I work 100% pro bono for my nonprofit, helping people and everything like that. You know, as the executive director, I do not get paid. And these people are over here attacking the nonprofit, attacking my license. And they're saying, oh, well, she's outside her scope of practice because she tells people to take ivermectin. And I'm like, no, I am not a practicing nurse. I do not represent myself as nurse, nor do I nurse. Just because I have a nursing license doesn't mean anything. So the State Board of Nursing is, you know, doesn't understand where they end and I begin, because I'm like, I'm not a nurse and you can only regulate my nursing license. So these TikTok nurses are telling everyone to file false complaints against me, and the State Board is getting 20 to 30 calls a day. They're calling the health department, they're calling the National Council of State Board of Nursing to have my license pulled. And I was just calling today, like, you know, a First Amendment attorney in my state. And they're like, oh, well, we take these cases for $100,000. And I'm like, who has $100,000? I'm like, I work for free to help low-income people because most of who we help is low-income and minorities. And I'm like, I don't have $100,000 for a First Amendment case against the State Board. And, you know, these trolls are banking on that. They're banking that they can just, you know, keep at it until my license gets pulled for something if they file enough false complaints, because I'll eventually run out of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lawfare. Yeah.
Lawfare.
And that's where we're at. It's just, I've got nothing left to fight back with.
Well, you have us. I'm praying for you.
So
yeah.
I know.
This is the thing. Okay. So, as for the health series, I'm trying to get people to think outside the box of their insurance card, right? They have their little insurance card and they're like $5 copay, you know, or whatever. And, they're excited about it. It's great policy, whatever, but it's not doing anything for them. They're not learning about nutrition. The nutrition courses that were there when I had insurance were all sponsored by Carnation, you know, or whatever, you know, or Insure.
Yeah.
Right. So I joined the Weston Price Foundation, right? So, I mean, I've been a member of them for years because of my son's recovery from his vaccine injury. But you kind of, people have to get out of the mindset of, you know, oh, that's a lot of money. I don't want to spend that because I only used to have a $5 copay. We need to start focusing on who will be there to help us and where we will go and who has the knowledge. Like, I wish that we could create our own board of nursing. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do pharma, you know, like I don't want to work for pharma. Mm-hmm. I mean, ivermectin's fantastic, but there's a lot of other things that can be done as well, you know, and I'm not prescribing anything, but if a patient calls me up and says, hey, you know, the doctor gave me these drugs, well, then I'll sit down and go through all of the side effects and the things and what the mechanisms of action and all that kind of stuff for them. But as nurses, I think that we should have, we shouldn't be governed by a board of attorneys or sometimes nurses, but they're being paid by pharma. I don't know. I don't want to get into that, but it's a, I wish that we could have our own, we just figure out our own thing, step outside of the, you know, rigmarole. I want to say bad words. Mm-hmm. Try not to.
Yeah.
Of what's happening in the world. So
a lot of people are turning to holistic health. And so we, within our network, we have hundreds of holistic practitioners in all the different states that we refer out to. So if, you know, all of our nurses are taught holistic health, they're taught vaccine injury, they're taught detoxing, they're taught all of this other stuff. And so they can refer you to someone in your area because we have nurses across the country. So they're part of our
network. That's amazing. And so you don't have to apologize. My whole point was, and I'm long-winded, sorry, you don't have to apologize for $5 because of the trolls. You know, I wish that it could be more than that for you guys. I wish that there could be like an automatic system that we could, you know, okay, instead of having that Starbucks coffee from the evil company, take that $7, take that $10, whatever it is now, like you get a big one. Mm-hmm. And like what would get me through a shift? And you put that into you guys. Do you know what I'm saying? I mm-hmm. want you to draw a salary. I want you to have money for all of this. You know, like what I, that's where I'm not a business person. So I'm terrible at that kind of stuff. I mean, look at me. I'm working for free. I've been working for free for years and I make my money doing other things.
That's, you know, and that's what we do.
Yeah. But you know, that shouldn't be the way it is. We really have to try to change this paradigm, you know, of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Instead of sick care. But anyway, so mm-hmm. Nurse Advocate Network. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And our nurses are taught extensively on nutrition if they aren't already nutritionists already. And they're all holistic health wellness coaches. So they actually, we get a lot of people off their diabetes medication. We get a lot of people off of their hypertension medications just by changing certain lifestyle changes, dietary changes, and things like that. So we don't just do COVID. We don't do just healthcare bureaucracy. There's a whole additional division of health and wellness where our job is to keep you out of the hospital. Let's try all these other things. And
that's,
you know,
amazing. So outside, they log on. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you just,
I was just asking how they do it. Yeah.
Yeah, you can just enlist the services of a nurse advocate, and our new website will be launching here soon. You'll be able to select by discipline. We have nutritionists on there. We have health and wellness coaches. We are currently training everyone up on mental health crisis and intervention for that, because with the looming mental health crisis, a lot of what we do is crisis intervention. It's a lot. So as fast as we train them up on one thing, it's like, oh, it's, the narrative is shifting and now we're getting mental health crisis. And it's like, okay, it's shifting. Now we're getting adult obesity. It's shifting again. And this is what's coming down the turnpike. You know, now we've got inflammatory disorders. We've got autoimmune disorders coming our way that never existed before. We have people who are new onset diabetics, you know, from having caught, you know, COVID or something like that. New onset, mm-hmm. you know, lung damage patients that need to be taught, and they don't have time to teach you in the hospital. So we do. So we do the whole spectrum, the whole spectrum.
That's wonderful. That's so amazing. I can't even tell you how exciting that is. So people can log on to this wonderful website, and I'll have the old link up and then I'll get the new link up, because now I'm never going to leave you alone. I've now become your new best friend.
It'll be the same link. Hey, I could use a best friend. the State Board of Nursing, it was coffee. Really,
yeah.
The State Board of Nursing attorney was like, we know that Nicole has no friends because she's probably isolated herself there in her community and she's unemployable. So she should probably cut a deal. And I'm like, what? Do they not know I have friends across the country?
All over.
I'm like, what?
And yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
and they're
ridiculous.
Like, she's unemployable. So I'm like, I'm doing God's work. Okay. I'm sorry if it doesn't generate a paycheck. These people need this. So, you know, it's always interesting to see like why people talk like that. And like, you know, money isn't everything. I'm like, yes, it would like file lawsuits and things like that, but the people are important, because the people that we serve are the people that everyone else gave up on that we never did.
Right. Exactly. And when you look at all the things that you've been through, you could have easily just been like, okay, that's it. I'm done. And instead you created this huge network of people that can, I mean, the nurses are so wonderful. You have a podcast too, where you know, that's the podcast mm-hmm. where you pay. I've seen it on Rumble as well. Is that the same thing or what?
Yeah,
what
exactly we have, it's called Ask the Nurses podcast. We're also on Apple iTunes. If you guys want to go leave us a nice review, that would be great because the trolls are trashing our ratings. So we'll get taken off Apple iTunes. But we bring on, vaccine injured to talk about their story. We bring in people who have been, medical gaslighting. We bring on doctors, we bring on nurses, we bring on scientists. To talk about health and wellness and what's going on. And so these trolls keep trying, they are just trying to take us down left and right. And I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. So yeah, you can go and see us on. Awesome. Yeah. I'm like, you can go see us on the audio visual on Rumble. And then you can also listen to us on Apple iTunes. So you can just take us on a road trip with you. And we have all sorts of health and wellness doctors, on there talking about detox, talking about, eating right, how to, avoid healthcare bureaucracy, all the alternative medicines and things out there like that too. So we try and reach people on all the different platforms that we can, and get the message out there.
That's so exciting. So I'll ask about how we can give you lots of money to help you with this in one second, but I had a couple more things I wanted to talk about, and they've kind of flown out of my hair. Oh, that's what it was. I wanted to know, I am seeing a lot of my friends, good friends that I tried to warn. I mean, I warned them so badly that they're really not my friends anymore. What's the meme? It's like lots of people in 2019 and then 2020, it's like two people. And then now it's like a potted plant is my friend. So
nice plant.
Yeah. I can get that. They are getting the jibbity jab. They're on the second, the third. I've seen a lot of cardiac issues, just SVT, supraventricular tachycardia just comes on and they're just like, oh, I just got it. And I'm thinking, you're 50. That's crazy and healthy. And I mean, really no issue at all. I'm starting to see little kids get really sick. So what kind of things are you seeing? Because mine is just in the community and I'm getting phone calls from people and a lot of them are afraid to ask me because they're afraid that I'm going to say, told you so, but I would never do that. I pray for everybody, whether you've had the jab, you don't have the jab, you're on the third. I want to help everyone, same as you. So tell me a few of the injury stories that you've seen just to keep us informed.
And it's really interesting because they think that we want to take away their bodily autonomy by not letting them get this vaccine. I'm like, go get the vaccine if you want. I just don't want to participate in it. I don't want it mandated. You'll do you. I don't want to participate. So it's really interesting. Right. In the beginning, we were seeing the elderly. And it was just the obituaries were just getting slammed, the elderly, the boomers. And then now what we were seeing, or actually I would say six months ago, maybe we were seeing all of the, the 30 to 50 year old range was being affected, with a lot of them ending up on disability. It's like, I couldn't go anywhere. Like when I was setting up the nonprofit, I went to the bank account with all my tax paperwork for the nonprofit. And I'm like, oh, and she's like, wait, what do you do? I'm like, oh, we advocate for people, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, by the way, my daughter, this and this is going on, it's happened ever since the vaccine. She's in a wheelchair now. I'm like, I can't even go to the bank and not deal with that. And I'm like, okay, well, you know what? You're going to want to try these protocols over here. You're going to want to go to these doctors over here. And you're going to want to try this detox protocol because we're seeing really great effects with it. And, I'm just, you can't escape it anymore. And then now what we're getting, as of just a couple months ago, the five-year-olds and up. So here's an example, just a state over from me. We got this, an aunt who this five-year-old got a hold of me and they're like, she got the jab. She got it 5 days ago. Her brain swelled. She's brain dead. What can we do? And I'm like, and I'm consulting them and I'm like, well, make sure they get an EEG. Make sure that they're still continuing to feed her. Just because you're brain dead, you're not brain dead until the EEG says you're brain dead, because I have seen some miraculous cases, especially with children. And so I'm like, we don't give up until we know resilience. Exactly. Yeah. Especially with the drownings as a trauma nurse, drownings, I'm like, you're not dead until you're warm and dead. And I'm like, we do not give up on that kid, when we try and bring them back. So, this five-year-old had her brain swelled. She ended up brain dead and she was officially brain dead. And, then I had to help the mom because it was the aunt conduing all the communications because mom and dad were overwhelmed with grief. as to what was going on. And then mom was in suicide crisis. So I was talking, I had to talk mom off the ledge because, you know, we're trained for suicide crisis, for mental health crisis. And after that, the family's like, oh, so we want to donate her organs, which as a flight nurse, we've transported a lot of donor bodies. We've transported lots of children and adults who need the organ, and we have transported lots of organs themselves. This is different now. The organs are not safe once you've gotten them from a vaccinated person. And there's tons of research. I mean, I was just talking with Daniel Horowitz about organ transplants and blood transfusions from those that have been jabbed. And there's scientific evidence that shows that. And I'm just like, you know, no one's screening for any of this stuff. And it's concerning because, like, let's say you get a blood transfusion. One unit can come from up to 10 different donors, you know, of mixed blood. And you've got a good chance that you're going to end up getting contaminated blood with spike protein. So, you know, now we're getting these children cases left and right. We helped baby Milo. He was an autistic five or six-year-old on the East Coast or the Midwest. And he had gotten the vaccine and immediately, you know, respiratory distress. He ended up with a trach. You know, his mom was a single mom who had adopted him out of the foster care system. She adopted medically needy children because she was a nurse. And we walked them, we found the nurses to relieve her at night. You know, so we were the ones, American Frontline Nurses, we were the ones that put out the ads to find the nurses to help them out. We were the ones that trained them on the ventilators because home health nurses don't know ventilators, you know, so she could take him home on the trach and he should be eventually getting off the trach. So these are all the things that we do because there was no one else that was going to help them. Who would have helped them? You know, nobody. We have so many cases like that. Like they don't know where to turn. And I'm like, turn to us. You know, that's what we're here for. And, you know, that's what people donate to, is to keep this organization running, to protect the nurses. And so we can pay for, you know, lawsuits. So we can pay for cease and desist. Like there was one situation. There was a 13-year-old boy, and by the time the father got a hold of me, it was entirely too late to save him. And, you know, I was on the phone with the dad, and the dad was in the hospital room because they let him say goodbye to his 13-year-old son. His son had COVID, but his son didn't die of COVID because 13-year-olds do very well with COVID. He died because they did not give him food or water for 4 days because they didn't want him to have any food or water in case they had to intubate him. But they actually, he died because of he had no fluids.
That doesn't make any sense.
There's this bizarre theory out there about drying out a COVID patient. And I'm like, that is not how the pathophysiology works. What are you doing? And this goes into why they would stop feeding and giving fluids to patients. You know, I'm just like, what is going on? We have pictures and we posted these on our social media with consent from the families. It'll say on the whiteboard in the hospital room, it says no food since whatever day. And I'm like, it's been 7 days. You haven't fed that person in 7 days. And we're not talking fasting. We're talking starvation. Fasting has, you know, rituals behind it, has a spiritual meaning or a religious meaning or a health benefit behind it. And you're taking, you know, potassium or calcium and sodium supplements or fluids like that. Here, it's nothing. They're not even caring if the electrolyte imbalances happen. They're not paying attention to your albumin or protein levels. They're letting you starve. And I'm like, what is going on with all of this? It's the most draconian thing I've ever seen. And this is an American medicine. And I'm afraid that this is the new standard of American medicine.
Is AI running all of the, are they, is it a, I mean, it sounds like to me, like somebody is sitting in a boardroom, like when they were planning the final solution and they were saying, let's think of the fastest way that we can take everybody out without really letting people know we're taking people out, you know, and kind of think to themselves, I know, no water. And let's make sure to get the babies. Let's get the 13-year-old, no water. That'll do it. So, and then they type it in, or is it like a computer making this decision? They look at him and they think, oh, well, only 13, you know, hasn't really done much. Oh, we'll let him go. I mean, who's making, it's like robots are making these decisions or something. Anyway,
it's protocol set by the hospital administration that is followed like dogma without question by the staff. I was dealing with the Tamara Drop case. That was the Florida kindergarten teacher we tried to save. And I was talking with the ICU doc And he was giving me attitude saying, well, I've been an ICU doc for 10 years. And I'm like, well, I've been an ICU nurse for 10 years. And I'm going to ask you, how many people have walked away from your unit using the protocol that you're using right now? And he's like, only about 5 in the past 2 years. And I'm like, well, I've only lost 3 patients out of thousands in the past 2 years. And I know their names. I know all 3 of their names. And actually at that time it was 2, Tamara made 3, but I'm like, so let's try something different. And we're in this care conference meeting and I'm like, I want high dose vitamin C, you know, as the attorneys are like arguing in the back, you know, and when we would end up in court the next day, you know, for when our hearing was, but in the meantime, I'm finagling everything I can get out of them. And the care team is like, one of the doctors will be like, I can't, it's not in the protocol. I said, well, order it a la carte because I know you're using Epic, the charting system. So there's a set of orders you can click, click, click based off the diagnosis. And then you can add things a la carte, just like a menu in a restaurant. So I'm like, add it a la carte. And he's like, and the doctor's like, can you just add it? And he's like, no, it'll get flagged. And I'm like, and that's the problem because it'll get flagged because administration, because he ordered off the, he was outside the protocol parameters.
These are not safe. This is just, I mean, it's worse than it's ever been because I started before there was computer charting, you know, like that was starting and I would sell those big bed sheets, right? That you could fold out and I'd write all my critical care notes and everything. And you could go back and you could look and nothing was flagged because it was a personal thing. You obviously reported it. You had your nurse manager, you talked about it. You would, you know, if there's problems with the patients, we'd always have our meetings, et cetera. But now it just seems like it's so easy for somebody to take over, but you wonder who's taken over. You know, it can't be somebody that's medical or somebody that has a soul. I don't know. This is really awful. Well, so
you know, and the interesting thing is about this is because they can hide behind the COVID measures. If they don't want you in the hospital, they can just kick you out and call security. Like they can literally have police remove you physically. We had a case like that in Washington where they physically removed the daughter from visitation, or they can actually take power of attorney away from you. We've actually had issues where let's say a husband is in the hospital on a ventilator or something like that. And the wife, the hospital will take away power of attorney and fight for emergency custody over the patient. So the wife, they're legally married. You don't need legal paperwork when you're legally married to be de facto power of attorney. They'll take the power of attorney away from the family in an emergency court order so they can continue to do their protocol. And I mean, we haven't even touched on the medical kidnapping of the babies yet, which is, it's starting to escalate as well.
That's been going on for years. And I know that, I mean, I was in jeopardy of that when I was in the hospital giving birth to my second son because we didn't vaccinate, obviously, his first, you know, his brother, our first son was brain injured by the vaccine. So the second one, my pediatrician, everybody, we all agreed, we're like, nothing, zip, zip, oop, shh, get out. And I had a midwife and everything. And she left the room when there was a slight complication, which means that I needed to roll over to get him to, you know, get out. And and then all of a sudden I had an OB in the room and there was a bunch of medical people and they were holding me to the bed and I could barely make that choice. I had to fight for no Hep B. And then I got a whisper in my ear from a nurse who was a friend of mine. Cause you know, we always know somebody and that said, listen, they're coming after you. They're going to come after you. They've called CPS, I think. So you better, get ready to get out and you better accept the vitamin K. So I had to say yes to the vitamin K. I worked with all the nurses to find the least toxic, which they're all black box. So that's ridiculous. So he still has some eczema, but otherwise he's 100% healthy and has had every, you know, childhood illness and does great and he's perfect, but he's 10 now. But I think to myself, he's going to
why would they do that though?
Why would they do that? You know, why
would they do that?
So, and that was in 2011. So you can imagine, I mean, what they're doing now. So it's really awful. And that's the reason we need to support people like you. This is the reason American frontline nurses, it's important where you're, we're going to go to the website. We're going to go to the Nurse Advocate Network. We're going to donate what we can. Solari is big on this. We have a take action campaign where we get people the help that they need. So this is really important. And I just think you're spectacular. So are there any final words that you want to talk about how to donate? Or I know that you have a new website coming up, so you probably won't be specific about that still, one right now, but.
Oh, you can still, the domain name will still be the same. We have so many pieces to the website that I am a nurse. I'm not a website developer. So we saved up our donations and we were able to pay for a website person to improve it so we can get all of our educational courses and content onto the material, onto the website. So no matter what, you just go to AmericanFrontlineNurses.com. And right now we have the Advocate Network down because it's getting revamped. But if you email us, we can give you a link to get to that access. Just because the page is getting worked on. And so you can just email at us at info@AmericanFrontlineNurses.com, or you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're also on True Social. Our podcasts are on Rumble. And we also have a Telegram channel that you can subscribe to as well.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, I am so excited that you came on, and I'm literally exhausted, and I think I might need to go to a bar now after hearing all the story.
I know, it's always emotionally exhausting talking about like the tyranny that's going on in these hospitals, and it's worse than it's ever been. And you're just, it's like you're trying to like beat back Attila the Hun with toothpicks, is what I feel like sometimes. Because, but yeah, especially with the recession.
Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, especially with the recession, donations are down, you know, because everyone is financially struggling, and nonprofits are like the first ones that, you know, start to struggle because we're donation based. And, you know, if we don't have funding, we can't fight these lawsuits. It's like I had to scrounge up money to find a wheelchair motor just 2 weeks ago for a medically needy kid. And luckily enough, we came up with just enough money to get the wheelchair motor because Medicare and Medicaid, of course, would not pay for it. They pay for one wheelchair and that's all you get for the rest of your life. Yep. And I was luckily enough to find a local mechanic in that state that, you know, was a good Christian man. Him and his wife came over and he installed the motor when I got there at no charge to the family. So donations are, you know, super imperative to keeping us functioning. I don't get paid. No one on my team gets paid to do what we do. It all goes back out into helping save lives, you know, defending licensing, you know, paying for cease and desist against people who are, you know, doing crazy things in these hospitals and stuff like that. So thank you so much for promoting us and telling people to donate. I really appreciate that.
No problem. You are always a member of the Solari family. And you'll actually get a free subscription for a year because I interviewed you. So that's very exciting. So thank you so much for joining us on the Solari Report. And I will be talking to you soon. Okay.
Thanks.